QST, 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 this is Tom Fry, KF6Q, acting as net control for the Tech Tuesday net at 1900 hours local time on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater. 147.330 megahertz offset of 600 kilohertz and a PL of 131.8. This net is conducted every Tuesday at 1900 hours, conditions permitting. Before I begin, is there any emergency or priority traffic? Please call KF6Q. Well, hearing none, are there any announcements for the net? Please call KF6Q. Alrighty, hearing no announcements, this evening we're going to be talking about some of the long wire matching methods, and we're also going to discuss antenna analyzers, just some basic stuff on how to use them and what they do and, what makes them so great. So, possibly a little DX report. Got to see if Mike's got anything for us there, so... WB6CLZ, are you out there?
Well, of course, I've got a little DX report, but not really worth anything worth talking about. We've only got 46 sunspots, and, the layers aren't that ionized, so, yeah, just minor stuff.
Alrighty, well, is that it? I mean, we have 46 sunspots. That sounds like a lot.
I haven't spent a lot of time playing around with it, but I did get on the air about 4:30, 5 o'clock, and there was a commemorative station for the USS Missouri in Pearl Harbor, 5-9 signal report there, and a Japanese station about the same. They were down a little bit, too. They were about a 5x6, 5x4. The DX is out there. I just haven't been out pulling it out. We had a busy day today. KF6Q and the Tech Tuesday Group, WB6CLZ.
Okay, roger that. Yeah, we've had a pretty busy day here, too. I know how that goes. So, let's see if we got anybody out there listening in. Mike, if there's anybody out there we'd like to just kind of check in, please come back.
DL and KJ6KDK.
AF6CJ.
We got a bunch right there. We had KE6RJ, Harry. Glad to have you with us tonight. And we had KJ6KDK and KDL. Jim and Marie. Rosemary, sorry. And we have AF6ZJ. Glad to have you out there, Guy. Is there anybody else?
A6CIA.
A6CIA. George, glad to have you with us. Anybody else?
AD6PL.
AD6PL, Howard. Harold, sorry. Harold, I got it there, sorry. Anybody else out there, please come back.
KJ6CCT, this is Hot Springs, Tom.
All right, Palm Springs, glad to have you with us. Anybody else?
KI6FJE, Apple Valley. My name is AJ.
All righty, excuse me if I'm trying to write these down as fast as I can, but Apple Valley, glad to have you with us. Anybody else?
W6AWL from Sun City.
Hey, that's a long way to shout from there, Art. Glad to have you with us. Anybody else out there? Alrighty, hearing none, anybody else out there can check in at any point in time, as Mike and I will be leaving a little more space this evening. What we're going to talk about, and Mike, you're saying there's only a few sunspots out there. Actually, I looked at the report on space weather. It looked like there was only three or four, but maybe they were grouped together there. So looked pretty quiet. And I think a lot of it, too, is how active those sunspots are and how large they are. Is that correct?
Not being a physicist, that's the way I understand it, yeah. And I just got the report, and there are 46. That's up from where we were. We were in the 20s, so, yeah, it's headed the right way. And then hopefully we'll keep increasing for a while.
Okay, Roger that. A couple things we're going to talk about in antenna matching, and I guess I don't want to get the cart before the horse, but maybe we should talk about the meter that we've been using and been using an MFJ. Harry's been so kind to loan us one. There's another gentleman out there, KK6R, has loaned me his to play around with some antennas. And Mike, you picked one up today, the VHF version, and got some good batteries in it, so you're all set to go. You're ready to play with that thing.
I am definitely ready to play with that. I just have to learn how to use it. I did download the PDF file from MFJ, so I do have the instructions, but I have to print those out, just sit there and digest it. And depending on what I learn tonight, maybe I won't have to read too much.
Hey, Roger that. No background in there. Yeah, they do a lot, and I think a lot of us end up with an SWR meter for starters. A lot of times it's built into our radios to some way, shape, or form. Or maybe we'll just have a simple S meter, but I think we have the S meter first. SWR meters kind of help, and they're not too expensive. Mike, what would you say, a brand new one, what are we talking about there? Maybe 20, 30 bucks, 40 bucks? I don't know. What do they run?
I would say that would be a ballpark figure. I haven't bought one in a while, but I would think you'd be able to get one for that. I would think no more than $50. They're a pretty simple device.
I'll do the check-in.
Yeah, Roger that. Now, I know that that they're pretty handy, and I know we use them a lot to check out, you know, mismatches. But the thing is, a lot of stuff can cause that SWR meter to give us some false information. I guess sometimes we just have to put up with that. The next step up, of course, is an analyzer, and I think MFJ's got a pretty popular model out there. The 259 goes up to the VHF frequencies, and the model 269 goes all the way up to the UHF frequencies, at least usually up to about 500 megahertz. So, however, it's a lot more pricey. Looking around, best I saw there, the 259 is ballpark about that, 259, maybe a little bit more, a little bit less. That's pretty much it. So, anyway, that's a big jump from 50 bucks, wouldn't you say?
Would say, but then again, you get a little bit more bang for your buck.
All right, well, let's talk about that. A couple things you can do with the analyzer. And like I said, if you have one, great. If you can afford to buy one, that's great, too. If you have a friend that has one, that's better yet, because you can borrow his. But anyway, essentially, they do a couple of really cool things. We're going to get into the primary thing we use it for last, but let's see here. I know we can check loss in a chunk of coax. We talked about that last week. Basically, the coax, you could have a chunk of coax out there any length, doesn't matter how long it is. And just nothing, the key point is nothing connected to the other end. It could be shorted out there or open, doesn't matter. Just don't have it hooked up to an antenna. We kind of learned that over some experiments. But anyway, with that, and it'll tell us the loss. So if you have a piece of coax, you say, well, gee, I wonder if this thing's any good. I guess, how would you actually go about that, Mike? Is there a little switch for that, or how's that work?
Really haven't gotten into the manual yet, but yes, I would think that once I read the manual, I'll read the procedure on that. I should switch over to that PDF, and then I can answer these questions.
All right, KF6Q here on Tech Tuesday. on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater every Tuesday at 1900 hours, conditions permitting. All right, well, let's not. I don't want to put you on the spot. I thought if you had one, I'd be looking that up right away. But I know you've probably been busy this afternoon baking or something. Anyway, well, there's a little mode switch. Actually, after you turn the thing on, there's a little mode switch, and it kind of cycles through the different things that it does. One thing is it will measure coax loss. It'll also give you some other what they call measurements, like a meter on capacitance or inductance, kind of a neat thing if you understand what those are. But you can check the coax loss just by going to coax. It'll say coax loss, as a matter of fact. It'll tell you how much loss, but you know what? There's another factor there. You have to set the frequency. Mike, how do you set the frequency in those guys?
You've got a little dial that you turn, and then it's got a digital readout that will give you the frequency. And I'm going to go grab that thing and put it in my hot little hand. By the way, back to SWR meters, we'll regress for a minute. On eBay, they're anywhere from $5 to $150, but the average SWR meter is between $10 and $30.
Now we know why they're pretty easy to come by. And like you say, $5, maybe $10 at a yard sale or something like that. So that's pretty cool. But anyway, yeah, they're very limited. They are a starter thing for equipment, but they are very limited. You could probably use them with something else to probably help you find out certain things. But essentially, with this coax loss, you've got the I want to set the frequency because we have some coaxes. I know, Jim, out there real quick, just real briefly, you want to just tell us about coax loss and different kinds of coax. I know you had experiences with two types, just real brief, how one falls off and one doesn't. I'm going to hand it over to KJ6, KDL.
Oh, leaving me a wide open forum to go crazy. Let's see, which way do you want me to go? Reading stats on a page doesn't actually rate up to what the product can actually do sometimes. Give me a step in on that one.
Well, I'd say with loss. Okay, you've got RG8, RG58, and say LMR 400. Are they all the same, or does one have everybody advertises, they advertise kind of stretch the truth. We know that. But basically, what do they do in respect to loss? Is there, what happens when we turn the frequency up?
Okay, yeah, let's step back a little bit. On coax, you'll notice there's different diameters, and I guess different diameters are made for a couple of reasons. One would be cost, because there's less physical material involved, and the other may be convenience for use, because the larger the diameter of the coax, the heavier and more difficult it is to work with. But as we've heard in previous Tech Tuesdays, RF tends to travel on the circumference of a circle, the outer edge of the circle, not through the center. So the larger diameter carries more of the signal, and that's where our reactance gives us the effective loss in signal strength. The thinner diameter wire tends to attenuate more, and as frequency goes up, it gets more difficult to send those high frequencies across those thinner wires, and that's where we get higher signal loss. I believe that's the direction you wanted me to go, and that's what I was experiencing. So now I have this large LMR 400 cable, not as large as some, but it's a night and day step up from the RG8X that I was using before, which was probably carrying about a third to a quarter of the potential of the LMR cable.
Okay, roger that. And we know you had some experiences with that, so ended up changing that out. But that's good. That's a very good description of a real overall aspect of coax and how it's functioning and stuff like that. So anyway, Mike, when we have these different coaxes, let's say you go to a yard sale, you pick up, say, a chunk of RG-8U, and it's a 50-foot chunk of that, and whoever you bought it from said, well, you know what, here, this is $100 worth of coax or more, but I'll let you have it for $30. Well, that sounds like a good deal if it's good coax. So I guess if we put the meter on there, and we know that RG-8U is supposed to have, I'm thinking, 3 dB loss per, say, at 2 meters, and we end up with 3 dB loss, and we put on the meter, I guess that would be a good deal.
I think that sounds like a pretty good deal. And last time I bought some, it was about $8 for that much coax. So you can, yeah, and you can really, really get some good bargains if you know what to look for and if you've got an analyzer with you. That's really the way to go. And make sure you check the connections on the PL259s, too.
You're Roger that. Now, of course, you got that chunk for $8. Did you ever check it out?
The way we checked it out is we put it on the antenna and put it on the rig, and everything went hunky-dory, so it worked just fine.
So your SWR was okay because you had it tuned up and all that?
That. We had that on a vertical antenna, and everything looked good. We had it matched where it was supposed to, and everything looked good.
Okay, so if that SWR meter doesn't really tell you loss, instead of, say, 3 dB loss, you could actually have 6 or 7, and would there be any way you could tell?
Oh, I don't know. Well, I could now that I have an analyzer.
Roger that, and that's what I'm trying to get at there, is that without the analyzer and actually testing the coax, all we can do is assume that everything's fine and hope for the best. And, of course, if we got some really, really lousy signal reports, that would be a clue. Or if it wasn't the coax, it could be, like you said, the connectors, the solder there, for whatever reason, ended up as a cold solder joint there, or possibly the shield wasn't soldered and maybe there was some corrosion in there. Or possibly water got into the end of the coax itself and was causing issues there. So all these little things, sometimes you can cut off about 6 inches off the end of coax and refit it, and all those problems go away. So anyway, so you really don't know. That SWR meter is not going to tell you anything, and that's kind of the point there. So let's move ahead a little bit. I think that it tells us a couple other things there, and we're going to do that for matching up. You've worked with me on that, correct?
Roger that. I have, but that doesn't mean I understood everything that was going on. You know, if I don't have the meter in my hot little hand, I generally don't pick up everything. I will after this.
Well, let me tell you the first big mistake that everybody makes using an analyzer is they hook it up and they set the frequency. And there's a setting, the mode setting there. It'll say R and X and or something like that. And what it does, it'll read out the resistance of the antenna. It'll read out the reactive component, the X value, and, of course, your frequency that you're sending down that little wire. And then it has an SWR reading there. And unless you've worked with it or know how to use this thing, 99% of the time, everybody just looks at that SWR. So here you've got an analyzer telling you all this stuff, and $250 machine, you're using it as a $30 machine.
That's why we read the instructions and learn how to use the thing.
Well, Roger that. So we're going to just briefly, so we have time for other topics tonight, just talk about that. And most of the time, we use 50-ohm coax for our radio systems, and everything out of our radios and into the tuners and all that is all based on 50 ohms. It's pretty much a standard. Of course, we would like to have perfect antennas out there that are also matched up to that, but they're not. But when we're trying to use that analyzer, we're trying to check out that antenna and see, okay, well, what are the two basic things an antenna can do? I mean, it's an antenna, so it works at all frequencies and does everything perfect, or what's the story there, Mike? Just real brief.
Want it to radiate at the resonant frequency, which is the frequency that you're trying to use it on, with a reasonable SWR and reasonable resistance and reasonable reactance.
Alrighty, I'm going to give you a chance to read that manual. But anyway, building on that, essentially an antenna will work at a lot more than just one frequency. It has one that it likes a whole lot, but that's its favorite. And we call that the resonant frequency. That's the one that you design. If you're making your 80-meter antenna, your 2-meter antenna, or a 6-meter antenna, whether it's a dipole, a ground plane, a quad, a Yagi, whatever it is, you've got a frequency that you're focusing on primarily, and you'd like it to work a little bit on each side. So that's the first step, and that's our resonant. And how do you remember how we found that, Mike? And if not, I'll take it from there.
I believe we tuned it for the dip on the SWR meter. I think that's how we did it.
Well, then we wouldn't need an SWR meter. I mean, we wouldn't need an analyzer. We'll just take our radio and put the SWR meter on there and flip through the bands on low power. Nah, come on. All right, we'll go from here. Essentially, this reactive component, because you're going to get a readout on your meter there, it's an R value and an X value. And the R value is pure resistance. And the X value is the reactive component. And when you are tuned to the frequency of that antenna, if your signal you're putting out with your little dial there, that X will equal zero, absolute zero. The meters, the MFJs, 259s, they're only so good. And if you even got close to zero, that's great, because that's the fault in the meter. Does that bring back some memories there?
It does now that I turned the meter on and actually looked at it. Yep, that completely makes sense now, and that is what we were doing.
Alrighty, just a little space there. So that would basically, this is how we're going to find, let's say we got a chunk of wire up there, and I've got this big old antenna here I got from a guy in a yard sale, and I have no idea what frequency it works at, but it's huge, and it could be any frequency. So I guess what you're telling me, if I want to find out what frequency it's going to work best at, I just hook up the meter, and I start at a band, a low band, or maybe a guess band, or if I'm building an antenna, I know exactly where I want it to be, and start low and just keep turning this dial until I see the little numbers changing back and forth and the X starts decreasing and gets to zero, and then I guess whatever frequency I'm at, that must be it, right?
Would like to think it's that easy.
Well, of course it is, and that's it. I mean, when X equals zero, or basically the reactive component, and essentially what that means in a little more complex terms, when the capacitance and inductance of that antenna wire cancel each other out and equal zero, that's the exact tuned frequency of that antenna. And you'll find other dips, too, and usually in multiples of that frequency. You'll find dips that may even go to zero or very close to it. And those are what called, are those harmonics?
I would think that's what we would call them.
And just a slightly on the technical side, there's actually some other areas, that'll actually get dips, but just some weird other things reacting. Now, when we have all this, of course, you know, the antenna should be at its operating height if possible. So it's not being affected by you, or, I mean, obviously, you don't want me just grabbing a hold of that thing. I think we had a guy that did that once with a J-pole, but what happens then? Does that throw it off if somebody's holding the antenna?
I think that throws a little bit of capacitance into it, and also when it's closer to the ground than what it should be, that throws a little bit extra capacitance into it.
right, so I guess I'm going to do this. I bought this brand new, 80-meter dipole, and I want to check it out. And I lay it across my backyard, and I got the meter on it. So you're saying that's something I shouldn't do?
I don't think so. I think you should try to get that up probably half wavelength or more up in the air until you to get an accurate reading.
Roger that. I think if you remember when you first put up your BKW and you had another antenna up there, your dipole, and remember when we raised the ends, all of a sudden things started working a lot better when they were higher than 2 feet off the ground. Anyway, so, all right, well, good deal. So now we do this and we get it up in the air, or partially if it's a 2-meter antenna, probably doesn't have to be as high as a HF antenna. We get up there and we find this X equals zero. But I'm looking, you know, when I'm doing this, I look over here at my SWR reading, and it's like 4-1. Now, why would that be? Or let's say it's 2-1. That's not good either, but let's say it's 2-1. So what would cause it? Is there something else there I'm not seeing?
Okay. I would think that apparently it's not cut right for the frequency.
Okay, Mike, I don't know if somebody else was under you there. It was somebody else coming back in?
W6MRK, good evening.
All right, Mark, glad to have you out there in Echolink. Good that you're listening in there. We're talking about using an analyzer. So anyway, Mike, well, the R value, okay. The R value, if the coax is 50 ohms characteristic and the R value is 50 ohms and our X is zero, well, what do you know? That sounds like that could be a special spot for that antenna.
I think that would be the sweet spot where you want to operate, and that should be optimal with everything right there, from what I understand.
Roger that. Now, what happens, okay, we know when the X equals zero, it's tuned in. We know, let's say I tune in this dipole. It's an 80-meter dipole, but I find that at 3850, yeah, X equals zero. So I guess that's really where it's tuned for. And I guess if I wanted to work around 3935, as we know from the past, we'd want to trim the antenna a little bit at a time. And that'll raise that up to possibly that frequency where at 30, let's say 3935 is X equals zero, and that's great. Now, the dipole, typically, if you read in the book, it's going to tell you that's 72 ohms. But that's if it's up about 70 feet in the air, which those two numbers have nothing in common. It just has to be up really high. So if I got a lower and I got only 26 ohms or 25 ohms, that's 25 into 50 is 2-1. So I look at my SWR and it's 2-1. Hey, how about that?
It may be time for a ballon. Am I getting on the right track?
Well, you know, that's one thing right there. And that's what we're going to talk about is... let's say it's in the other direction for whatever reason. Instead of being 50 like we'd love it to be, which would be a 1-1 match with X, you know, being zero, of course, at that frequency. So we look out there and we say, hey, okay, it's not. It's 100. So, and it's also now because 100 is pretty typical for a loop, and we have 50 ohm coax. Well, 100 divided by 50, there's 2-1. And that's not the exact formula for, you know, SWR ratios, but that's a good hip shot. So we got a whole bunch of different things here, problems. But let's say if we have a 100 ohm antenna and a 50 ohm coax, so we're never going to get better than 2-1. Well, we have a tuner, I guess. That might help. But wouldn't it be great to get it right? How do we do that?
The only thing thing I can think of is some sort of a ballon to get that down into the range, or that is the frequency that we're operating on, and we may need to be off the frequency a bit.
Well, I don't know about the off frequency thing, but the thing is, if it's 100 ohms and we have 50 ohms, that's like having the same problem. Well, my radio I'm talking on works on 12 volts, but I have 120 volts here at my wall. So what do I do? Well, I have a transformer. I have a power supply that steps that down to 12 volts and also changes it to DC. But so if we had some kind of way to transform the 50 to 100, looking in from the 50-ohm end, it's going to look perfect, and looking in from the 100-ohm end, it's going to look perfect. And my golly, could be done with a transformer or a ballon. A ballon actually is a transformer if it's a 2-to-1, and that would be that magic number, 2-to-1. Now, I know they're out there, but I haven't seen any that are really handy. But that would that sound like that would work?
Oh, I think you're going to have to come up with some sort of a matching device.
Well, exactly, and we can always take, and everybody out there is listening in, what we're trying to do here is actually get a better match right up there at the antenna feed point. Now, obviously, this all comes down into the radio or the ham shack, and most of us have a tuner, or the tuner's built into the radio, and it's going to really make the radio happy, but even though the radio's happy, that little match up there is not. That never changes. That tuner does not fix that problem up there. And, of course, there's SWR is going to be an issue, that 2-to-1 ratio. And depending on your lead, it could actually not be as big an issue if you're twin lead or whatever. But let's just pretend we're using coax for tonight. It's a transformer. We need to go from 50 to 100. And that's exactly that. It's a transmission line transformer or a ballon. A ballon actually is from going balanced to unbalanced. We got to do that too, huh? Because we have coax, which is unbalanced, and our antenna is balanced. Is that correct?
Roger that.
So we actually have a couple issues there. So the ballon, and if the ballon was a transformer all built into one, now, I think you're using one on your loop. It's a ballon, which means it's taking the balanced antenna to the unbalanced coax, therefore the coined term ballon. And because your loop out there, well, 4-to-1 is probably not the best ratio, but it's transforming and dividing that down by 4. So at certain frequencies, it's going to take it down to 25, but a lot of them it's going to be between 25 and 75, so kind of a balanced out there, but the perfect would be 2-to-1.
We're just trying for a happy medium to where we can get the best case scenario in the real world.
Roger that. So anyway, of course there's ways for our antennas to be wider bandwidth, folded dipoles of wider bandwidth, but it gets kind of picky about which frequencies is going to work at as far as skipping over the bands. But with that that all said, let's say that we want to work on 3935, so we cut that antenna to 3935. And because our antenna is not up real high, you know, we just can't get it up there 60, 70 feet in the air. And so we've got this 25 or 26 R value, and so we need a 2-to-1, at least a transformer. And a ballon to help that other condition, but a 2-to-1. So there's a lot of stuff in the antenna manual about that. And there's toroid TLTs, transmission line transformers. You can come up with any match that you want.
Relatively inexpensively with a toroid.
Right. So I guess what we're trying to say here is the R value not matching up. And let's say the X value is, who knows what it is, but we're trying to figure all that. All these different things, they just do not, there is no way that they're going to show up on an SWR meter. And sometimes the X values can be tweaked a little bit one way, and the R values the other way, and they compensate with the SWR reading, but you're not getting your full signal to actually the antenna. You get it into the reactive component a little bit, which is not 100% there. So the SWR meter is a good meter, but it doesn't tell us the whole story. It's kind of like an idiot light in the dashboard. Hey, look, it came on. That must mean that I have a problem. So anyway, so with all this, you have a new meter, and you're going to have a lot of fun.
I am looking forward to it. I just have to give myself some time, and we're going to go down the hill and tweak the antennas down there and see what we can do in the next couple of days.
Okay, I'm going to give you another little thing here, a little trick that Greg, I think his call is what, KE6 or K, I'm trying to remember, it's KE6, CUX? Anyway, you know the Greg I'm talking about, very sharp guy, gave Chris, said, here, take this chunk of coax, throw it out there, tie this in, because his tuner wouldn't tune his antenna on to very well on 80. Well, Z was doing that. Actually, it was a stab in the dark, but you can actually use that meter analyzer to figure out how long a coax you have to add and why. But that's topics for another Tech Tuesday. Anyway, so we know the analyzer is a good tool. Got to kind of get used to using it and make sure it's turned off when you're done, correct?
Well, especially if you're using batteries, because as we all know anymore, batteries are not the least expensive thing in the drawer.
Roger that. And we know that they can be charged. I think there's a little jack on there to put a charger on it. I'm not positive. I think you can do that. And there's a switch inside to flip it to chargeable batteries. So, you know, that's kind of a good thing, I guess. But anyway, a lot of different things there. That's a whole another topic about the battery thing. But anyway, well, yeah, so now this analyzer actually opens up all these different things, and there's actually way more than this. A couple things there, though, just to let us know, you know, what's going on. And if you're designing antennas, it's like an invaluable tool. If you're just going to check out your own, might be better to borrow one if you can find somebody who has one, because it's pretty pricey just to do a one-time only check. Real quick, back to you, Mike.
Yeah, Roger that. Well, yeah, I think it's good to have one in the group. That way, you know, we've got it available to us without having to borrow one. And you know, with the antenna work that we're doing over here and down the hill, yeah, this is a good thing to have. The price was right, and I really couldn't turn it down.
Roger that. Anyway, anybody out there, or just any questions about that analyzer, or got you baffled on it? Before we move ahead, we're going to also talk about some other ways of matching up stuff without that TLT or whatever. Any other questions out there or comments? We'll give a little break here for people to come back. Go ahead.
KI6SKN.
Hey, Chris, KI6SKN. Go ahead.
Yes, I just bumped in the frequency here, and I apologize for that, because you guys are always here Tuesday. Are you talking about the MFJ analyzer?
Yeah, real quick there. I'm sorry. I thought I heard somebody else out there, but if I did, why don't you go ahead? Is this GVL? Is that correct?
K6YNW.
Yeah, we are. Just briefly, a little bit. You want to go ahead, man? I think I got another guy in there right after you. K6YNW, go ahead.
Okay, I can chime in. There's a guy, WB60UJ David, has one. He's in Whitewater. And anytime we have a problem, he'll run over. And I had an antenna coax that looked good, and then after that, looked like a dead open. So we replaced the coax, something I couldn't tell with my SWR meter. So they are cool. K6YNW.
Okay, roger that. You know, and that's when you mentioned that about the coax, I've read about this. I don't know if I've experienced it. I don't think I have yet. But if the coax is really bad, the SWR won't show a reflection coming back, which is all it really does. And you can have bad coax, and the SWR meter is saying, it's okay, everything is going out, nothing's coming back. But nothing's really getting to the end, hardly past it. So I think that's what you're kind of describing there, and that's why it's, the analyzer will solve that problem right away. So appreciate that input. Did I hear KI6SKN out there?
Yes, you did. My question is, I'm on balance now. You guys were talking about balance a bit. Toroids, I understand they can get saturated and basically be useless. Do you know what kind of power you're talking about you have to put into them to make that happen, period of time, or what causes toroid saturation? Saturation. This is KI6SKN.
Well, I'd be very happy to talk to you about your problem there. So anyway, saturation of the toroids. Yes. This is how this works. The toroids, like anything else, power supplies, batteries, anything, they come in different sizes. Typically, what we want to use for ham radio, especially for balance, I'm going to say they're about 3 inches outside diameter, maybe 2.5 on the inside, you know, where the hole is, and say anywhere from 1/2 to 3/4 inch thick. That's a pretty hefty toroid. And if there's a thought, and that one right there would probably be good for, 500-600 watts. And there is a way to tell how what you need there. What they do a lot, and what Palomar does in their kit, they take two of those and they stack them. So it's kind of like, well, if I need more power, I either get a bigger power supply or I parallel two of them together, and I'm going to get basically double or whatever, add the power from the two power supplies. And essentially, that's what happens. So the magnetic saturation, this is what Palomar is. The cores are different material. There's a lot of different materials for them, but there's like three basic ones that you and I are going to use. And using those cores that we're supposed to be using, and using stack them. If you think two is not enough, stack three. The wire goes, they just glue them together. That's all you got to do. They're perfectly fine. And two generally will handle 1,500 watts, full legal limit.
Okay, very good. That answered that question. Obviously, or as you probably know, I'm not using balance. I'm using chokes. And so far, I guess I'm doing okay. One of these days, I would like to get one of you guys over with your MFJ analyzer and just really check out my antenna, my ZS6, my Burger King Walker. Yes, I would like to do that one of these days and just find out really what is where and to check out this coax I picked up also. Okay, go ahead and continue, Tom. KI6SKN.
Okay, Chris. Yeah, and actually your choke ballon there is doing a good job keeping the RF from coming down the coax one-to-one. Now, the only thing that these TLTs or toroids or whatever you want to call them. See, what they can do is actually both at the same time. You can have a one-to-one toroid ballon, or it can be a 4-to-1, or it can be a 9-to-1, or it can be a 1.25-to-1, or a 1.5-to-1. And the reason that we use these toroid cores is they have like 10 to 50 times the, what do you call it, magnetic ability. So, in other words, it would take an air core, which is what a choke ballon is with a coax, that's an air core, versus the ferrite core, which is the toroid. It takes almost 100 times more whatever to accomplish the same thing. So, anyway, without going into great detail on that, the toroids give us this option, primary, say, 10 turns, secondary, 20 turns. There you go. You also get a ratio, so kind of cool. And anyway, all right, Mike, anything to add? Also, anybody else out there, any other questions, please come back.
Don't have anything right now at this end, Tom.
Hey, Tom, out of curiosity, when are you going to get your analyzer? You've been talking about that for the past year.
Ah, you're not paying attention, or you check in once in a great while. I have borrowed one from Don, KK6R, said he will need it sometime next spring. So that's actually going to work fine for me right now.
Okay, did you ever get any more equipment back from Lance, and what's his status?
Well, send me an email on that, and we'll talk about Lance after the fact. So, anyway, let me go ahead and call for any more questions out there. Anybody about the meter? Pretty much probably got everybody confused somewhat, but, you know, once you play around with these things a little bit, and like Mike says, download the PDF file. It's on the Internet. It's free. It's out there. So, and that gives you some basic ideas of, you know, what does what, so. Anyway, Mike, did you get a chance to look into the Delta Match, the infamous Delta Match? I think Mickey brought that up at our meeting.
K6CIA.
All righty, hang on, Mike. We got George out there. Go ahead, KI6CIA. KA6CIA, sorry.
Yeah, I just want to mention one of the things you didn't mention that I think is really important is when you're using that MFJ tuner. I do have one, the 259. When I was messing around with antennas a lot, it was invaluable. But is you do not have to have a radio, so you can check your antennas outside with the coax. You don't have to keep coming in and looking at the radio to find the frequency and what all you want. But that's a big advantage to the analyzer. Okay, 6CIA.
Oh, a very good point there, George. You're right. I mean, I guess sometimes I skim over things that to me are kind of seeming like the obvious, but that's very true. You don't need the radio hooked up. Actually, you don't want the radio hooked up. And you can do all the antenna work. I'm sure that you have, George, with stuff in the past where you can do, and this is kind of like what we do over there at the antenna workshops that we did. And put the a little analyzer on those, and basically, I don't even know if we ever hooked them up to a radio when we were there. But when they finally were hooked up to radios, I know Jim was extremely happy with his J-Pol once it all got squared away. Chris is with the home build he made, and all we did was kind of, well, I don't know, call it perfected a little bit, but it was still in good shape. And just to let everybody know, that quad that was built at the last antenna workshop also very wide band and in excellent shape. So very good point, George. Yeah, don't need the radio. You got that analyzer, and you can pretty much sky's the limit. So all righty, anybody else out there, any comments or questions about the analyzer before we move forward? All right, if anybody thinks of anything, feel free to give a holler out there. Anyway, as we are running, actually, once again, it's almost 10 minutes to 8, but I want to talk about, we'll just dabble on this as we're getting into the extra hours here. One way of matching that dipole up there, which is, you got the dipole up there, and it's not as high as it's supposed to be, and Mike, I think we were talking about it was like 26 ohms, and here we got 50 ohm coax, so ignoring the balanced to unbalanced condition for a second there. We're tapping right into the middle of this thing. Is there a way to fix that? I mean, what else can we do?
Well, I think from what I've been reading today that a delta match would be the way to go. As you move the match out, you change the resistance, the impedance of the match. And a very simple way to go, very mechanically stable, got a lot of advantages over some of the other antenna matching techniques.
Yeah, roger that. Now, since we're talking about coax, which is 50 ohms, and we want to tap out there, this right here in the middle of our split dipole, you know, we're 26 ohms because we're not up that high. And, of course, this is going to be hard to do. It's a lot of up and down. So you'd really like to have it up there where it's going to be. So what you're telling me, Mike, we move these ends, the shield on one side and the center conductor on the other, we kind of separate them. Instead of, say, half an inch apart, we move them 2 or 3 inches apart or start out with an extra inch or whatever. So what happens essentially is that 26 ohms won't go down. It'll actually go up. The further out we move this, the higher up it goes. Is that what we're saying here?
That's the way I read it, and it's a pretty simple way to do it from what I'm reading.
Okay, roger that. And we're just going to really dive into the deep end here for a second. If we've got 450 or 300 or whatever, open ladder line or window line, now, of course, that's even more. That's really worse. So now we're like 450, and we're matching up to this dipole that's got 26. So that's delta match. Actually, we could probably just start splitting this ladder line apart some distance back, so it just tapers out there until we find that match. Would that work?
Well, according to what I'm reading, it has the ability to match a wide range of impedances, and the model that I'm looking even goes up to 600 ohm ladder line.
All right, well, that's fantastic. So there's another way of getting that thing to match without, any other devices such as toroids or stuff like that. So that's kind of a simple way. Now, we're not going to get it too far into this, but this T-match and gamma-match is actually, if you took those ends, just took them out even further and further, and instead of being a delta, it becomes basically just a T, and that's why they call it a T-match, which is paralleling actually that dipole. There's one advantage to that, one major advantage. It's a lot more work to tune up, but it's a mechanical advantage, and called the plumber's delight, if you want to hear the term. Do you know what that is, Mike?
I see that it's not like a delta match because it doesn't radiate at all, but the advantage from what I'm reading here is you do need to over adjust the length of the antenna, and you probably need to make the separation on the T-match quite a bit more. It's got all the lengths and the wavelengths here on this model, and kind of interesting from what I'm looking.
Oh, roger that. I'm glad you found something there. If anybody out there has access to or owns the antenna, ARRL antenna handbook, there is a good little area there. It's about 2-3 pages long. And, of course, it's in the section of matching the feed line to the antenna or the load. And it's pretty neat. And they go over actually all of this pretty nice. So. But, yeah, essentially that is an advantage, is that mechanically now that dipole does not have to be split. It's one piece. And so it's one solid wire because now you're tapping out quite a ways out. As we recall, that your driven element does not have to be insulated from the boom. And if you're working with Yagis, this could be an advantage because it's got a structural advantage. It's one solid piece fastened at the boom. Sounds strange that it would work, but... look at a J-pole. That's probably the weirdest-looking thing if you don't understand how it's working. So, yeah, so that's why they call it the plumber's delight. It's mechanically solid. All the reflector, directors, and driven, all solid pieces, all mounted to the boom.
Another advantage is that it reduces static and gives you a little bit of lightning protection if there is such a thing.
Well, yeah, you start thinking about that. Here's all this aluminum up in the air, lightning attracting, and it's all grounded to the boom in the middle. All the elements, the boom is grounded to the mast is hopefully grounded to the tower, tower grounded to the ground. So that is a very good point there. And of course, as only as we know, as George has told us many times, the grounding around the tower is only as good as the soil it's in. So anyway, all right, well, I think we've actually, we're going to try to get into more dealing with the T-match and gamma match and stuff like that. And kind of running out of time here, but maybe next week we'll get into that. We'll just get into the little finer details, not a lot, just, you know, how they're used and they're using the Yagis and how we actually can use some of those, too, for matching up loops and quads and all that good stuff. So anybody out there with any questions or thoughts or suggestions or comments, go ahead.
I have a thought, K6CIA.
The Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater right there. KF6Q here, Tech Tuesday. Go ahead, George.
Yeah, I know you are working up a website, and I think it would be neat if you could kind of combine it with Tech Tuesday. Like if we were to bring, almost everyone is sitting next to a computer by their radio, and if you could... like if you were going to bring up the analyzer tonight, if you had that on your website, we could bring up the website and actually see a drawing or a picture of whatever you're talking about, whether it's antennas, analyzers, or radio components, or anything. But I think it would be neat to see that in conjunction with Tech Tuesday.
You know, that's an excellent suggestion, because as we all know, TV did kind of overtake radio, and the Internet is overtaking everything. And that would be a very good idea to have diagrams specifically for whatever we're talking that night, and just showing, like, well, if you look at, you know, just follow down, the scroll down the page, and we'll kind of start at the top and work our way to the bottom and show the different things there. I think that's an excellent idea, George. Of course, we got a lot of work ahead of us getting the site up and running, and hopefully, you know, we can do that. So it's a lot of work. But I do have a huge amount of stuff for reference already and had permission to publish this stuff. Going to be a good site. Going to be a good, hopefully, a go-to-one-site-only place. There's a few out there right now. I mean, I'm not trying to take anything away from any other sites out there. Just this will be just a combination for us and Tech Tuesday and all that stuff. So I appreciate that suggestion, George. Any other great ideas, please come on in with those. So anyway, anybody else out there, please come in. Well, Mike, I think we did it again. We either put him to sleep or got him baffled. Anyway, now I'm sure everybody's out there. Hopefully, if there's any questions, always feel free to ask or email at kf6q@arrl.net. And Mike, any other comments to add as we get ready to close this puppy down?
Like the idea that we tippy-toed into this and kind of... Now we're going to have to broaden our horizons. I did notice one more comment, though, that the Delta match with the T-match, it says here it's widely used for VHF and UHF Yagi antennas, not necessarily where it would be on a dipole or something like that, but I can see how it would be used on a dipole. Well, I think we're ready to kind of wind it up. And a little comment, I probably won't be checking in next week. We're going to visit relatives up in Oregon for the holidays, so if the weather holds. If not, we'll be here as usual. Back to you, Tom, KF6Q and the Tech Tuesday group. This is WB6CLZ.
Well, Mike, if you're going to go on vacation, by golly, you're going to have to find somebody to fill in for you. So anyway, I'm sure there's somebody else out there, maybe Jim or somebody who could be available next Tuesday. And course, I'll get whoever is some good information ahead of time, and you can look at. So anyway, well, good deal. Yeah, we'll see what happens next week. Hopefully, you're going to be safe with all your travels. Anybody else out there, any questions, any comments, any suggestions, please come back before we close down the net. All right there, Mike. By golly, I think it's a wrap. I want to appreciate the stuff out there from Chris, KI6SKN, and George, KA6CIA from Lucerne Valley there. Appreciate that. Great stuff. Everybody else from listening in there, I do appreciate that. K6YNW, appreciate that input of how you troubleshot and got rid of a problem that probably couldn't have been found out any other way. So, good deal. And to everybody out there listening in, appreciate that. Please come back again next week. And we're working hard to get this website up and running, and as soon as it's functioning well, to some degree at least, we'll let you all know there. So, all righty, QST, QST, QST. This is Tom Fry, KF6Q, acting as net control for the Tech Tuesday net. Closing the net at 2000 hours and 1 minute. And I'll be returning the repeater to normal use. And once again, I'd like to thank everybody for listening in and participating, and hope that you can join us again next week. This is KF6Q, and we'll be clear, standing by.